Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. If you enter 4420 Ohio Avenue, St. Louis, into Google Maps, what comes up is a photo from May 2022. It shows a hill-like area with a flat top, mostly covered with vegetation, and what appears to be a tree stump. A set of steps at low grade lead up to that top, and next to the steps, you see the remnants of a structure made of white and gray rock. A high chain-link fence surrounds that, quote, hill. On the other side of the fence, sitting upon a lower but raised platform of earth, is a white single-family house built in 1928. The 4420 Ohio Avenue Google map also shows the words building and, further down, Sugarloaf Mound. There used to be more than 100 of these human-made earthen mounds in St. Louis, which is how it got the Mound City moniker. Sugarloaf Mound is the very last Mississippian mound remaining in St. Louis. What's behind that high fence was also the first part of it regained by the Osage Nation. The idea to reclaim Sugarloaf Mound began in the early to mid-2000s. At that time, Jim Gray began his first of two terms as the Osage Nation's principal chief, an elected position he held until 2010.
We had to go through a lot of changes internally to get our house in order during those years. And it led to us going through a lot of internal discussions in our own community about what were the priorities of the tribe at the time and what were the short-term goals and what were the long-term goals. And we went through a process called strategic planning where we did plenty of outreach into our communities and the Osages that lived across the country. And we did mail surveys asking them to respond to kind of feedback we were getting. During that same period of time, we attended some events marking the 200th anniversary of the Lewis and Clark exploration. And we were the host tribe in that area in St. Louis because that's where we originally were. And that relationship that started from that event sparked a lot of conversations about reclaiming the Osage story in Missouri.
To then Chief Gray, reclamation of story meant reclamation of ancestral land. And those early aughts conversations, many quite contentious, eventually led to the 2009 purchase of 4420 Ohio Avenue, a piece of land along Interstate 55 in South St. Louis. Again, just one portion of Sugarloaf Mound. Last month, the Osage Nation and the St. Louis Arts and Civic Impact Group, Counterpublic, announced that the owner of the White House in the Google Maps picture of Sugarloaf Mound has agreed to transfer the property to the Osage Nation, which brings it one step closer to regaining the mound in its entirety. Anita Fields is a citizen of the Osage Nation and a multidisciplinary artist who has a special relationship with Sugarloaf Mound. In 2023, she and her son created a sculptural and sound installation there called Way Back as part of the Counter Public Arts exhibition. And she joins us now to talk about her experience at the ancestral site and what this recent development means for her and both fellow and future Osage people. Anita, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you. I'm glad to be able to speak to you.
So, Anita, what is it that occasioned your very first visit to Sugarloaf Mound?
I have been to Sugarloaf Mound over the past few years several times. One of them, the initial first visit that I had to Sugarloaf Mound was with the Osage Nation, Dr. Hunter's, the Office of Preservation within the nation, takes trips up to the area, to our ancestral homelands, to acquaint people with our history there. And then shortly thereafter that, I was invited to create work for the 2024 Counterpublic Triennial. And this was the site that was chosen for my son and I to participate in the triennial.
And the visit that you made there for the first time, what is it that you felt at that site? What is it that you noticed?
Well, it's quite evident that you can hear the water from the river, which is very near, because this site sits on, the hilltop overlooking the river. And so the sounds of nature are very prominent, the wind, the river, the earth. So for Osage people, our worldview centers around the connection and our relationship as a human being to the earth, sky, and water. Mm-hmm. So these are all really prominent there.
And these trips that you are talking about, former Osage Chief Jim Gray, who is actually your cousin, Anita, Jim told mm-hmm. me that reclaiming Osage land is an endeavor that has had its opponents, that it's not necessarily sit well with some members of the tribe. And he said that the work of the person you identified, Dr. Andrea Hunter, who's the director of the Osage Nation Historic Preservation Office, has been critical to helping make a continued and compelling case for reclaiming sites like Sugar Mill Mound.
Dr. Hunter has conducted annual field trips where she charters a bus and, she has like 50 seats open, and it's first come, first serve. Whoever signs up earliest gets to go. And it's like a week-long trip into the state of Missouri and the Ozarks and Arkansas, and these were our Aboriginal lands. And she would take the Osages on these field studies to help educate people one at a time. And she's been doing that ever since she got here.
And again, that is former Osage Chief Jim Gray talking about a program that is led by Dr. Andrea Hunter to take Osage people to significant sites around the country. When you went on that trip, Anita, who were you with? And what is it exactly that you saw there at that time?
I was with friends and relatives. In the early beginnings of those trips, most people were Osage people from Pawhuska, Hominy, the Gray Horse District. And I went on that trip actually last year, and the difference that I saw was that there were more and more Osage people that have not lived on the reservation that were seeking information about our history. So that was the change that I noticed, and because in the beginning it was very much people who, were aware of these trips, and signed up immediately to go on them, because with the shared interest of understanding where we come from and who we are, mm-hmm. and so to be with that group of people and to be able to view these significant and historic sites that are important because this is our original homeland. And to be able to make that connection is extremely powerful.
When you went to Sugarloaf Mound, did knowing that it had yet to be wholly returned to the Osage people affect what you and your son made as an art installation for that site?
For sure, yes. I think with the knowledge of knowing that it was partially returned, there was a sense of sadness about all of that. Understanding that this is our original homeland and understanding that connection to that site is very important. As an artist who, I work with, like you said, multidisciplinary, and I work with fabrics and fibers and textiles, but I also work with clay. And I know that the earth holds a memory of the cultures who have been on that land, who have occupied that space. And so this was really important to me in terms of hoping that people who came to view our installation would have a sense of who was there. Who was there before St. Louis was developed, before St. Louis became a city? a sense of history, a sense of us being able to return to our this homeland that is ours.
Mm-hmm.
And then for it to not be fully returned, it's like having one foot, you know, firmly on the ground and the other foot in a type of we're not sure what's going to happen with all of this.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things to put a finer point on it is that Missouri has no federally or state recognized tribes, as most indigenous peoples mm-hmm. who once inhabited what's current day Missouri were forcibly removed or resettled in what is now Oklahoma, which is where you make your home, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Nebraska and Kansas, and that was due to the Indian Removal Act of 1830. And the reason I bring that up is that we've had conversations on the show before about the indigenous past not being the past that is very much present. We are going to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about a new and recent agreement to return more of Sugarloaf Mound in St. Louis to the Osage Nation.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Eileen Cha. Let's return to our conversation with Anita Fields, member of the Osage Nation and multidisciplinary artist. We're talking today about the recent announcement that the Osage Nation, in partnership with the St. Louis Arts and Civic Impact Group Counterpublic, has secured an agreement for the return of ancestral land at Sugarloaf Mound. Sugarloaf Mound is the last Mississippian mound remaining in St. Louis. It is also the oldest human-made structure within city limits. Now, Anita, you are not someone who lives in St. Louis or the St. Louis area, but people who follow your work will always associate you with Sugarloaf Mound because of the installation you and your son created for the 2023 Counterpublic exhibition. So, I mean, to what extent did the news about gaining back more of Sugarloaf Mound affect how you felt about that news?
Well, it felt wonderful. Creating the work that my son and I made for that site-specific place was a very moving experience, and, you know, one that was probably one of the projects that is the closest to my heart in terms of understanding not only the space, but the importance of the space, and also what we could bring to that space to inform viewers of our history there. And so I was elated, of course, because, you know, that is one of the goals that we had in mind when we were creating this piece, was to be able to inform people of our presence in St. Louis. And you know, this was really important to us because no matter where we're at in this current history of ours, there is an idea that natives don't exist. Or I'm sure if you went up to the, you know, a person that lives in St. Louis and asked them if they were aware of the history of the Osage people in the Missouri area, they would not be able to tell you much about that.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that we are non-existent, that, you know, and our history of how we were removed from there, most people don't know that. And so this was one of the goals that we had, was to be able to, in this installation, bring people to this site and have them be able to think about the effects of displacement.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of interactions did you have with non-Indigenous folks at your Sugarloaf Mound installation, you know, that point to how the mound's return is important for non-Osage and non-Indigenous people?
You know, earlier in the program, you talked about how many mounds were in existence at one time in the St. Louis area,
mm-hmm.
and that Sugarloaf Mound is, you know, the only one that is in existence today, which shows us the history of, just disregarding our land sites, the mound areas, that they weren't considered as anything important, when in fact they all hold the history of who we are as Osage people. So I think that in itself, that kind of a learning experience is really important for people, because this is not the only site where this has happened or the only land space where this kind of thing has taken place. And so for people to understand what went hand in hand when you talked about Western movement or, development in terms of who had to suffer and what happened during that time period.
Mm-hmm. The timeline for full control of the mound, I understand that there is a great deal of optimism that the last remaining landowner, which is a pharmaceutical fraternity, that they are on track to also agree to give the land back to the Osage within the next year or so, by the end of 2025. Do you know what will happen to Sugarloaf Mound once it comes under full control of the Osage Nation?
My understanding and what I have heard is that there are hopes of a center being there that can describe this kind of history that we're speaking about, that there would be a visitor center that would include the history of Sugarloaf Mound.
Mm-hmm. And if you are asked, Anita, to return to Sugarloaf Mound to create a different or follow-up installation, is that something that you would do, or would it be more fitting for another Osage artist to take up that honor?
Well, I would be most honored to be able to do that. But there's no reason that many artists cannot be involved in an endeavor such as that.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything that you would maybe add to that first installation that you did with your son to recognize the development that has come?
I think it's important to note that what can happen with great collaborations that have the same intention, and that the good that can bring about, I think that's very powerful, and that speaks to the power of art.
Mm-hmm.
What can come about
right
when you are given a different way to think about something. And I know that, many hands were involved in this to bring this into fruition, including, the Osage Nation, Dr. Hunter, Jim Gray, many Congress people who stood beside them, to make that happen, but also with Counter Public and then the curators, Risa Puello, and, their name is escaping me right at the moment, New Red Order. There was a lot of conversation going on, within this group, and a lot of speaking. And I don't remember her name right at the moment, the woman who has agreed to do this. But there was a lot of talking with her and speaking with her, and hoping that, she would understand the well intentions of this and how meaningful it would be for everyone involved. She also has a place in this history, and her family.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think of it as everybody making this happen, and it feels really, really good, because you don't often think of the power of art within this kind of negotiation.
Mm-hmm. And that is Joan Heckenberg, who is the homeowner,
yes.
Right? And she actually talked with me about seeing people come to Sugarloaf Mound to see the installation that you and mm-hmm. your son put there. As we wrap here, the last question, what would you ask those who visit Sugarloaf Mound now to consider or do now that just one parcel of that land has yet to be promised back to the Osage, Anita?
Well, I would hope that they would think about the importance of this history, not only for us, but as residents of St. Louis, the importance of knowing the history of the land that you occupy. I would hope that they would want to know more. I would hope that they would want their children and their families to be aware of this. You know, like I said earlier, this is a lot of forgotten history. And I also would, you know, hope that they understand that we didn't just leave that area and assimilate into, you know, out into the world, that we are a very thriving community, you know, here in Oklahoma, and with great concern about our history. And I would also, you know, I know that they could ask themselves the question, what can I do, you know, to help? What can I do to make this better? And the Osage Nation has a foundation. It's called the Osage Nation Foundation. And that is one way, you know, you could always contribute to that, because it does fund things of, you know, through the arts and things for the betterment of our community.
Mm-hmm. Anita Fields is a member of the Osage Nation and multidisciplinary artist. Anita, thank you so much for talking with us today.
You're so very welcome. Thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Elaine Cha.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.